Welcome everyone to Dragon Quest FM, where we talk about and obsess over Dragon Quest. My name's Austin.
I'm BJ!
It's music.
It was music. This week, we're going to be talking about the Itrhythm Dragon Quest, which I have officially played and beaten. I put beaten with a question mark at the end because it's not really the kind of game that you just beat. It's a rhythm game, so it's like there's always technically something to do if you want to try to 100% the game. Like, it's going to take a lot longer than if you're just playing through like the courses.
Right. And you've played all the courses, you have gone through all of the songs, and at least seen everything the game has to offer in that regard.
Correct. Yeah. Played through the courses. It's actually a really fun game. I know I mentioned it at some point on the podcast, I think, that I had played like a demo piece of it before, and that it was basically like Guitar Hero with Dragon Quest characters.
Right.
And I mean, yes, that's essentially what it is. So episode over, I guess.
Well, it was good talking to you folks.
Yeah. Good week episode. I love this game. Okay, I'll just go ahead and say it. I like rhythm games, though. Like, I know I definitely mentioned it on the show before that I really liked Kingdom Hearts Melody of Memory, which is essentially just a Theatrhythm Kingdom Hearts game. I'm not sure why it didn't have the Theatrhythm name, because it's made by the same studio.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it's like Indie Zero or something like that is the developer that makes these games. And they made Melody of Memory as well. And it plays just like a Kingdom Hearts Theatrhythm game would. So I'm not sure why they dropped the Theatrhythm game, other than the fact that Theatrhythm is kind of like a stupid name for it.
It's a stupid name. I've always hated it. And which is fair to say about most Square Enix titles, actually, or Squaresoft titles, I suppose. But I expect it because most people would see it and not play it, whereas Melody of Memory seems more like a typical Kingdom Hearts title.
The thing that's odd, though, to me is, like, it's not even Square Enix titles all the time. I mean, I guess, you know, Nier has its own weird naming conventions, too. But especially Tetsuya Nomura is really bad about it, like with Final Fantasy VII Remake, Intergrade, Intermission episode, and like stuff like that. And he's the one.
Is that what it is? Like, I actually can't remember. I can't tell if you're making fun of it or not, because I can't remember actually what it is.
Okay, so Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade is the PS5 exclusive version that has the PS5 version of the game, as well as the Yuffie DLC episode, which is called Intermission, except Inter, I-N-T-E-R, are capitalized. And Mission isn't, but it's all one word.
Okay. And then isn't there another one that, like, isn't there actually something like interlude or like episode or epsilon or something at the end of that, like intergrade, interlude, something?
Intermission, episode intermission, is the
episode
one.
Intermission. Yeah, there's just too many. Like, I hate it. I hate so much. I hate that so much.
Yeah. So, but oddly enough, Nomura is the one who came up with the Theatrhythm title. So it's weird, since Kingdom Hearts is kind of his thing, it's weird that he didn't keep his own Theatrhythm title for Kingdom Hearts.
And it's not that in Japan either, right? It's not Theatrhythm Kingdom Hearts in Japan?
No.
Huh. Then I don't know. Marketing, I guess. I don't know.
For whatever reason, Theatrhythm was invented for Final Fantasy. Then they did a Final Fantasy Curtain Call follow-up, and then either after both of those or in between both of those, they did a Theatrhythm Dragon Quest. And I liked this game well enough that I actually bought both Theatrhythm Final Fantasy games the other day.
Oh, wow. That is saying a lot.
They were cheap, though. The first one is only $9 new on Amazon, and the second one is $14 new on Amazon. So it's like I got two 3DS games for like $20, which is like never happens.
And those are in English, too. The Dragon Quest one is still in Japanese that you played on the Japanese 2DS. You've got the Metal Slime one, but the Final Fantasy ones actually came to America and got translated into English, right?
Correct. Yeah, the Final Fantasy ones are both in English, yeah. But this one is all in Japanese. And like I mentioned in a previous episode, Theatrhythm Dragon Quest, if you're going to play a Dragon Quest game that's in Japanese, Theatrhythm Dragon Quest is by far the easiest one to play, because first of all, a lot of stuff is in English anyway. Like, I don't know if you saw the different, like, screen shares I put on Twitter. But
some of them, yeah.
Yeah, like the rankings that you get, like a perfect is called critical, and then there's like good, great, bad. Like those things are all in English. The ranks you get assigned at the end of the fight based on how well you've performed are also in English. Like it'll say, I thought S rank for the longest time was the best one. And then I got an SS rank and I was like, oh, what? And then I got an SSS rank and I was like, man, there's no way I could be better than this. And then someone on Twitter, I'm trying to remember who it was and I can't remember. I'm so sorry. Someone told me that if you get perfect, like all criticals on everything, that you get the SSS rank and also a King Slime medal instead of just the normal slime medal that it gives you for having like a full chain without missing any. And so I finally managed to do that on the next to last course before I had played through them all.
Okay, I thought it was the last course that this happened on. So cool.
No, it was the next to last one. It was a traveling course, oddly enough, which I'm not good at, but I'll get to that. And so I got it and I was really excited and I was like, man, I can't believe I got this for myself. And I went back and looked at it after the fact and realized that it was 145 critical presses all in a row. So I got a full 145 without missing a single one, and all of them were perfect.
It's absolutely crazy that, because I'm looking at this picture right now, and like I can't even imagine doing that. I'm so bad at rhythm games that the idea of doing 145 criticals and not even greats, but criticals, I can't even fathom being perfect at a game like that. That it's nuts. Like I'm mind blown that is possible because my brain and my fingers don't work that way.
I will say I thought this one was easier than Melody of Memory. For the same reason that I think Guitar Hero on like hard mode is easier than easy mode. And that is because it follows the rhythm of the music more.
Yeah, like, exactly.
If it follows the rhythm of the music, I'm pretty good at it. But like,
what about the rhythm of the night?
So this one was pretty good. It seemed to follow the rhythm even in easy mode, which is why I played through like all of this in the first round.
Right.
You can select easy, medium, hard from any course. You don't have to play it all through easy and then medium and then hard. You can just do it off and on. And lucky. You unlock rewards. Like sometimes it'll be like, to get this reward, like you need to have a perfect chain on medium. So if you play it on all the way through on easy, you won't get a prize from doing it necessarily.
Oh, okay.
So it is a good idea to mix it up, but sometimes those prizes you have to play on easy. And so this one seemed to stick more to the actual rhythm, whereas Melody of Memory, like when Grace and I were both playing it, we kept messing up because like the button presses wouldn't be fitting with the way the music was going.
Yeah, I gotcha.
And it was really hard to do that. But this one didn't, which I thought made it easier overall. There's a lot of music to unlock. And one thing I really like about the game is that you basically and I've not played any of the DLC. There's DLC content for this game that I have not played. I only played what was on the base cart here. The challenge mode is where you go through and it's kind of like a map. You play through levels. As you complete them, you can unlock more levels. But you can basically start at the first level for any of the first 10 Dragon Quest games.
Okay.
So it doesn't really matter where you start. It's just as you progress, you will unlock some of the other levels beside it. It's like this web of levels. It's kind of like it's like the sphere grid in Final Fantasy X, where it's like you unlock that node and then like all the ones around it become available for you to play next time.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I got you. Uh-huh.
So that's what it's like. So that's where you do most of it. But one of my favorite things in the game is that once you beat all of, let's say, you know, the Dragon Quest I levels, then you unlock, it was called EMS, and I don't know what that stands for, and I didn't bother reading the Japanese. But it's basically like an event movie where it goes through like the beginning of the original Dragon Quest, like the Famicom version of Dragon Quest, which looks a lot different than the Nintendo version. And it goes through all of that. And you get to watch it from beginning to end as you're doing the button presses. And you can do that for all 10 games once you play through all the challenge levels of each one. And I thought that was really cool. I will say that I was really bad at it because I kept watching the movies behind it. Like I wouldn't press the buttons on time because I would be getting distracted by the scenes. And it's kind of a catch-22 because it's like if you don't press buttons enough and you lose HP by not hitting buttons. Mm-hmm. And so if you keep losing HP enough that you like get a game over or whatever for that level, then you don't get to see the full movie. So it's like a lot of times I would play it. I started playing it the first time where I would just focus on the button presses. And then the right. second time I would focus on watching the movie, but just try to get button presses in often enough that I could enjoy the movie, but also not get a game over so that I could see right. the end of it all. And so it was kind of like a weird like balancing act there, but I did think it was really cool that you got to like watch like a movie basically of like right. the Dragon Quest games once you beat through the challenge mode like that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Like, especially going through all of them like that, the ones that a lot of people may not have ever played. But it's in Japanese, so most people have at that point, though.
Yeah, oddly enough, even this game kind of dumps on Dragon Quest X.
How so?
It's just like, okay, you know in Dragon Quest XI S with the Altar of Ages, how 10 has the least amount of content?
Yes.
It's the same thing for Theatrhythm. It's like the first three games have like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like 8 levels. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm miscounting them in my head, but it has like 8 levels to get through. And then the next through 9 have like 2 less than that.
Huh.
Have 2 less levels than that. And then 10 has 2 less levels than that. So it has like 4 levels.
That sucks.
Yeah. And the only thing I could think of was that at the time when Theatrhythm Dragon Quest came out, I believe in 2015. So 10 didn't have as much of the content as it does now. So I was like, maybe that's why it was shorter. But I thought it was weird that even in Japan, they kind of dump on Dragon Quest X for some reason, apparently. Man. Because between 11S, which was also available in Japan doing this, and Theatrhythm Dragon Quest doing this, I'm just like, what's the deal? Why does 10 arguably has the most content out of all the games? Not even arguably now. They're like,
it's so much.
Yeah, they announced a version 6 during that live stream last week or yep. whenever. So it's like, why does 10 keep having the least amount of content and spinoffs like this? And maybe it's because they made Theatrhythm Dragon Quest with a global audience in mind and then just never bothered localizing it.
Maybe so, but you would think that they know that international audiences are wanting Dragon Quest X content as much as possible. That's why 11 makes me mad with the stuff that they did in 3D. Well, I guess not 3D and 2D, especially for S. It's like, why do so little for 10, knowing that like the English speaking world is clamoring for it?
Yeah. The other like main game mode, I guess you would say here, is just like, I don't even know what it's called because again, it's in Japanese, but it's basically like as you play and beat levels in challenge mode, then these levels will appear in another game mode that's kind of like free play, I guess is what I would call it, where you can just play through these levels. And that's where you unlock the movie modes eventually, is in the free play mode. And you can just go back through doing that. You level up, you get rhythm points, which are called Rithpo.
Rithpo!
And it's in English, Rithpo. And as you get up enough, then you unlock more characters that you can play as. You start off, you have access to like all of them, but you can only pick 4 to be in your party. And then you have to unlock the rest of them. And so I chose my starting party. I didn't want like a main series hero.
Makes sense, yeah.
And also there were some of my favorites from other series that I wanted to add in. So it just worked out that I didn't have a hero. But I picked a Weddy from 10, of course, because I love Weddies. I picked Carver from 6 because I love Carver. I picked Bianca from 5 because I'm a Bianca boy. I think that's how I referred to it in like one of our very first episodes we ever did. And then I chose the Prince of Kanik, and I'm not sure why.
Why?
I chose him. I think it was because I really wanted Mindenhall because I like the Mindenhall design. I know you hate it, but I like the goggles and the pilot's cap. But I was like, nah, I don't want to pick a hero. So I chose Kanik. But then after playing through about like 20 levels or so, I was like, screw it, and went and got Mindenhall instead and traded out Kanik and played as Mindenhall the rest of the game. So I played the bulk of the game as Mindenhall, Aweddy, Carver, and Bianca.
Okay.
Like, And it wasn't too bad, even though I introduced Mindenhall late, he didn't get too far behind. Like, I think by the time I got all the way through challenge mode the first time, it was like at I think all the characters were around 70, level 75, except for Mindhall, who is like at 55. Right. So he didn't fall too far behind, and levels really don't seem to matter all that much in this game.
That's what I was about to ask. How does that even work in a rhythm game?
Like the first three challenge modes, it's like recommend, like some of them are like, I think the highest one I saw had a recommended level of 20 because you can play them in any order. None of them go up too high.
Right.
And so it's basically just like the amount of health you get or like damage you take if you miss.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Kind of thing. Going through each level, though, as you face new enemies, you kind of unlock them on the board, which shows their profile, which I liked. You also unlock cards. So there's a card collecting mini game that is part of this game. And you know what I love?
Card collecting mini games.
Card collecting, yeah. And so just collecting in general, really. And so I really liked this, that there are these like cutesy little Theatrhythm versions of monsters, of characters, of even NPCs like the Tuffy and like a wizard from Dragon Quest III and things like that.
Yeah.
That you could unlock cards as prizes. Kind of like I mentioned earlier about like, you know, you have to play medium.
Yeah.
Getting a full critical and medium or whatever. And to unlock them. Well, sometimes you would get cards for that. That I thought was like really cool. And I still don't have them all. And I think it's probably because once you play through challenge mode the first time, you unlock like this other weird challenge mode. It's like 60 levels. You unlock them, but instead of it being like a you can go wherever you want kind of path, it's very much more like an ascending linear path upwards. But you're playing through like the same stuff. It's just like in a different pattern.
Right.
And it's a little bit tougher. So that was pretty cool. I still think the card collecting is probably my favorite aspect of Theatrhythm, right, just outside of the general gameplay. You know, and this game is super short. It's a rhythm game. It's probably one you could play through all of the challenge mode levels in probably like, I'm going to say 5 hours, maybe even four. Like it's something you could barrel through pretty quickly. I spread it out to by like, what, 3 weeks, I guess, maybe.
Yeah. You've been playing it for a little while.
Yeah. And it's just because even though I love rhythm games, it's like it's not really the kind of game where I just sit down and play it for like 3 hours at a time. You know, it's a game where I boot it up on my DS. I play like three or four songs and then I'm like, OK, I'm done now.
Yeah, I've got games like that where it's just like, well, that is all that I care to play about this right now. It's fun. But it's like, OK, I'm done.
Yeah. There's also like a casino type mode that's kind of so you have challenge mode, then you have like what I'm calling free play, and then you have what I'll call like casino, or it's really just like the like what's it called, like Pachisi from
Pachinko,
from Dragon Quest 3. I think it's called Pachisi.
I can't remember.
Yeah,
I know what you're talking about though.
I'm pretty sure it's Pachisi, and so If I'm wrong here, then somebody can correct me, but I'm just going to call it Pachisi for now. It's basically like the Pachisi boards in Dragon Quest III, and
right,
then a similar mini games were like added on in other like DS remakes as well. And then kind of like Fortune Street, in our Fortune Street episode, I talked about how some of it was reminiscent of Pachisi from Dragon Quest III.
Uh-huh.
It's essentially that, where it's just its own little mini game that lets you play Pachisi to your heart's content, I assume.
Right.
I didn't like Pachisi in Dragon Quest III, and so I didn't really touch this at all in this game. I booted it up once. It was like really slow. It's like, you know, you roll a dice and then you're just watching it happen, and it's like, mm-hmm, it's like playing Fortune Street by yourself. It's just really not that fun.
It's like womp womp.
Yeah. And so I didn't like it. I was talking to Platy from Slime Time about it because he loves it. He asked what I thought about it, and I was like, you know, I really don't know. I've barely touched it because I didn't like it in DQ3.
Right.
So definitely take that criticism with a grain of salt there, because that's just not something I like anyway. And so I did not experiment with that game mode very much. So I'm definitely not, I definitely don't have much to say about it other than it exists. It's like Pachisi in Dragon Quest III. And it's just not my cup of tea.
Yeah, Fair.
Yeah. Overall, I thought Theatrhythm was really fun. I definitely, if people have an ability to play it, like a Japanese 2DS or 3DS, which I understand is harder now and more expensive because of like COVID, you know, driving up the retro gaming market and things like that. And
it's than it was last 2 years ago, whenever you were able to find that one for like $149.
It's also weird to think about 3DS to call 3DS retro gaming, but I mean, I guess dead console doesn't.
Yeah, more of out of production.
Yeah. So it is definitely harder for that. But for anybody listening who has, you know, a way to play it, I would recommend it. It's not like, it's not a game that you would want to spend $300 getting a Japanese 3DS for.
Right. There are other games that you would, but not this one.
Yeah. It's a game that if you own that console already and you like Dragon Quest, you should definitely check it out. And it's fairly inexpensive for a Dragon Quest game. Compared to the Final Fantasy Theatrhythm games, it's still pretty expensive. But like, right. I bought this one new for like $30.
Which is very affordable for a new Dragon Quest game these days.
For a Dragon Quest game and a 3DS game in general, I mean, $30 isn't bad at all. So yeah. So I didn't have any quibbles. Isn't that what you called it a couple episodes ago? I had
the quibbles.
I had no quibbles with that this time around. I was just like, you know what, $30, that's fine. I'll throw my money at it and call it a done deal. And I actually lucked into buying it alongside of Terry's Wonderland on the 3DS.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was from the same seller, and it was like, it was on eBay, and they were both new. If you bought more than one item, you got like a 10% discount, and it was already free shipping, and I was like, you know what? I'll get both of these together. And I've heard someone on Twitter, again, I can't remember who, I'm so bad at this, I'm sorry, but somebody on Twitter told me just the other day that they had caught up, you know, on all the Dragon Quest Monsters episodes. And that Terry's Wonderland was like way, way better than any of the Joker games. So I'm probably going to end up trying it eventually. My biggest thing is that I'll need to, there's a fan translation for it. And So I'll need to like mod the 2DS a little bit for it.
Oh, and yeah.
It's mostly like the double whammy of the Japanese 2DS I have is the liquid metal slime one. So it's not exactly... So it's like it's a limited edition 2DS. And so I'm very torn about, do I want to risk messing something up? Because I'm not that tech savvy. So do I want to risk messing something up so that I could get a fan translated version of this game and play through it or not? And then also, I don't know if the fan translation, because it's meant for an American audience or a Western audience, I don't know if it would work on the Japanese 3DS.
It should, because the translation should just be an overlay patch, and the ROM itself is the one. Well, the game itself, I guess, the game cartridge is the one that's region locked. So it should. I think this is where you send your DS to Ryan and get him to be like, "Please, Ryan, help me." I'm sure he's done it.
Yeah, maybe so. I'm not sure about that, but yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence with it. But either way, Theatrhythm, Dragon Quest, I think it was worth the $30. If you're listening to this, think the game sounds fun and don't have a Japanese 2DS already, like I do not recommend buying that console just for this Theatrhythm game.
Pick up the Final Fantasy ones and see if you'll like it for $9 on Amazon.
Yeah. And honestly, $9 to $15 is about what I feel like a Theatrhythm game is probably worth. This game was fun and I didn't mind paying $30 for it, but it was like, you know, I probably spent maybe 10 hours on this game just between, and it didn't take that long to do the first challenge mode playthrough. Like if you're just wanting to get through the songs and then call it done, like that's not going to take long at all. It was just that I kept playing it. There's like some weird challenges. I don't even know what it's called. That's an option that I even forgot to mention that's in challenge mode. Where it's like a six level like spider web looking layout. And it's like you beat the first level and then you unlock two on the next path. And then you can go there. And if you beat it, you unlock one on the next path. And then you have to unlock multiple ones to access a boss. And then if you beat it, you get like one of the various prizes
that
you can get, which is like there's also equipment and like weapons and stuff that you can equip your people with.
Oh, I didn't know that.
that I did. I used it once. It was all in Japanese, so I couldn't read it. So I had no clue what I was really equipping them with. I was just kind of focusing on the numbers and, you know, what was raising stats and what was lowering them. And so based on that, like I really didn't know what I was doing, and it really didn't seem to matter. Like, it wasn't like these levels were hard. The gameplay is based on like time button presses. So it's like, as long as you get those button presses, I really don't think things like health, weapons, anything like that really matters. Like, yeah. It did not seem to matter like to me at all. So
as long as, you know, you're good at rhythm games, you can probably push past it. But for people like me, it would be like, you know what? I should probably gear up my party and level them up.
Maybe. I don't know. I still don't know that it made that much, would even make that much of a difference.
I don't know.
We'll leave that as a mystery for today.
Ooh, for the Questy Boys.
That's really all I have for today's episode on Theatrhythm. I mean, it's a fun game. It's a very short game. I think this was probably about as good of an overview as anybody could give without, you know, getting into like Mueller boring territory.
Right.
But yeah, unless, you know, you guys want to hear me do a Ben Stein impression for another 5 minutes, I think that's it for today.
I don't think anybody wants that.
Thank you guys for listening to today's episode. Remember, if you want to find us on Twitter, you can. We're at Dragon Quest FM. If you want to find us on Patreon and help support this podcast, you can find us at patreon.com/DragonQuestFM. If you want to talk to me individually, you can find me at Dragon Quaston on Twitter.
And you can find me on Twitter as at Professor Beej. You can listen to my other podcast, the Geek to Geek podcast, anywhere podcasts are sold. And if you want to talk on Discord or Slack, we have a wonderful community at geektogeekmedia.com where you can find invite links.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye.